Welcome to the FrogHop Food Founders Interview. Today's guest has been pioneering in the organic sector for approaching 30 years. Charles Redfern founded the Organico Real Foods and Fish Forever brands and is now stocked by Ocado, Amazon, Whole Foods, Planet Organic, a whole host of independents and delis, as well as selling through their own website. He's a food sustainability pioneer and activist with extensive experience in the organic sector right across Europe. They're a B Corp certified company that's passionate about sourcing food that's well made, tasty, but also good for the planet and fair to the people who make it. Morning, Charles.
Hi. One thing that maybe you didn't know, because we're looking very much at, in an English context, about 10 years ago, we, maybe even longer, we thought there's a real proper organic sector in Europe. And by proper organic sector, I mean not only that it's growing, but there's lots of independent organic shops, and we thought that's our future. That's where we should be. And so we're very close to half of our turnover being run in Europe. So we're with a lot of really good European organic chains. France has got 3,000 odd organic shops that are the size of a nice co-op, one of the new ones in the new estates, or a little Waitrose or a little Marks and Spencers. You drive up to them. They're often outside the town centre. So some are in town centres, of course. In Paris, you wouldn't really drive up to it, but outside, you go to the sort of estate where you find the furniture shops and all of those sort of places. And you drive up there and you put a trolley and you push it around and you've got a choice of 5 organic strawberry jams, 5 different peaches, 8 different tomatoes, 100% certified organic. And when we saw that growing, we thought, well, these are the people that are going to understand our products and pay for them. And I'm delighted to say we're doing quite well there. It's not a walk in the park, but yeah, we're doing well.
And is that how you started Organico? You kind of thought that model that you saw in Europe, that's where the UK will go?
No, it was the other way around. When I started, we had Planet Organic. It was just after BSE. And I literally, there's a lady called Renee Elliott that you would do well to have on this podcast. She founded Planet Organic. And it was so close to after BSE. And buyers were almost bussing. Waitrose and people like that were bussing buyers over there to see the future. And that future has never quite happened. And when Planet Organic opened, because I'm half French, I'd be visiting France. And I had French suppliers. I started my business as an agent. And I was taking on other products. And because I'm half French, I could speak to French. And once you had one or two people, they'd recommend themselves to other people. It's quite a small industry in the end amongst the owners. And they'd say, I'll try Charles. And I was bringing their products to Fresh and Wild, the precursor of Whole Foods, Freshlands, Wild Oats, all those shops, and Planet Organic when it founded. And Planet Organic was almost ahead of France. And now France has got massive shops up to 600 meters square, literally trolley pushing, everything you could want, butcher counters, in-house bakers. It's beautiful.
What were you doing before?
I was in the city, and I don't think I was particularly good at what I did, but I was a corporate finance person in a Japanese bank. And I landed there by accident and stayed a bit too long and thought, what am I doing here? It's not me.
Yeah,
I liked food. I wasn't organic. I just have a background of eating well in that traditional sitting around a table sort of thing, French background. You know, I realized, I've got this culture of quite simple but good food. You know, and then the French do have that beautiful. You associate it more with Mediterranean countries like Italy and Spain when you're looking at a comedy, say, and everyone's sat on a big table and it's beautiful outside and they're under the trees and they're eating for 5 hours and the kids are running around and the old people. And that was also a little bit of my background, that you'd have these family events and it would be lovely. And so I think I just like food. I'm greedy. And that's what brought me in. And then through that, I landed in the health food sector. And then through there, I learned about organic. I thought, well, this just makes pure sense, that the way it's grown really matters.
Yeah.
And that's the story, really.
I tried some of the pasta and the pasta sauces. If it's my job to cook, I'll be asked for suggestions. And one of them would be like pasta and some sauce. And it's always a no because it's like, oh, you know, you get an aftertaste and all that kind of stuff. But we had that. And my wife's like, there is no aftertaste. It was beautiful, beautiful food. Really, really nice. And it just kind of made me think about, I guess, what organic is about. Every ingredient is thought about, I guess. Is that what appeals to you?
This is, you've raised a really interesting point. And that's, we think of organic always as a farming system, but actually it's a production system. And we've heard a lot lately in the news about hyper-processed foods. And one of the easiest ways of avoiding hyper-processed foods, in the vast majority, because there'll still be some hyper-processed ingredients to organic, but one of the easiest ways to avoid them is to buy organic. So for example, a breakfast cereal, which we don't do, in organic, there's a lot of things that you would routinely put, or I mean, ready meals would be the tip of the iceberg, that's the end of the scale. But there's so many things you just can't do in organic.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to do it because you're not allowed the processing aids, you're not allowed the additives, you're not allowed in the actual manufacture, nothing on top of what you're not allowed to do in the growing itself. So that's a really important point. And I think that's why organic foods come out more naturally. And then, you know, we'd like to argue that we're working with really good growers, which we are, really good farmers. A lot of them are 100% pioneers. They deserve the accolades. They're pioneers of the organic. Though in organic, you can be a business. You can run some farms that are, you can run some fields that are not organic, some that are. I tend to be working in vast majority with people that are 100% organic. And they always do a lot more for things like biodiversity, and they bring it. They always, when you go there, you realize that they're having hookups with a local university. They're inviting schools over. That sort of thing is, they're the people I like working the most with.
I presume it's quite a commitment to go organic as a farmer.
There'll be a lot of organic people that go there for the ideology. And that ideology is nature-friendly farming. But then, of course, as organic becomes a system, and much for the same reason we were talking earlier, much less in the UK, but because there's an incentive in Europe, and maybe even the conversion incentives, but there's a market incentive, then people are going in there for business reasons as well. So you get a mixed bag in organic. You get, you know, it's a set of rules. And you can get badly done organic, badly farmed organic. You can get basic. It's hard because when you rule out the, and this is almost an argument with the regenerative potential, an argument between organic and regenerative, is when you rule out pesticides, you're not just on a not don't do list. You're having to do other things to make your soil fertile. So you're doing all the regenerative things more or less. It's quite hard. Not to, otherwise you wouldn't be growing anything.
You quit your job in the city and started Organico, or was there a...
No, I started a non-organic product. I was selling it. I was lucky. I was naive, extremely naive. I started selling it's like a squash product, you know, concentrated. And it was grenadine and Oddbins. I don't know if you remember Oddbins.
Yeah, Oddbins, yeah.
So they picked it up. I was lucky. And Harvey Nichols picked it up. And they liked my packaging. It was just different. But where I'm saying I was naive is that I didn't know anything about the food industry, margins, complexity, power structures, all the rest of it. I didn't know that other people had tried this product before and failed. You know, I went to France saying, no one's got it in England. I remember this. Oh, this is going to sell easy. I'll just ring Sainsbury's up and they'll buy it. And it wasn't like that. And through then, we discovered the health food sector. And then we started being more kind of strategic in the things that we added. And then Organico came along. And Organico was a kind of way of, because I was doing other people's brands, it was a way of saying, well, I better put things under my own brand. It seemed silly to do separately a pasta brand, separately a tomato sauce brand, separately a pesto. And it was a way of kind of grouping the marketing investment expertise, and then you're partnering with producer experts.
So what's in there? Give us a little overview of what's in the range at the moment, and maybe what came first as well.
Yeah, I've even got packaging if you want.
Ooh.
Got it on the shelf. This is a I like this one. I'm scared we'll run out of it. It's the first organic yellow passata in the UK. So you can make yellow sauces with it. We've got a cherry tomato passata. We've got these range of breadsticks. They're really nice. Some giant crackers that are quite similar. I've got a range of pastas. And we've got, which has won a Vera's Fine Food Awards. It won the Great Taste and it won the Organic Award in the past. And it's a black rice.
Ah.
Whole grain. So we've got a wild red rice. We've got a Canaroli rice, which is akin of risottos. And we've got the black rice. We've got pestos. We've got spread. We've got our own tomato sauces that we made the recipes of. We've got olive oils. We've got sunflower oil. It's kind of an Italian-leaning range of store cupboard staples. But our plan is to grow it possibly away from just being Italian.
I was going to say, how do you decide what to stock? I mean, part of it is touring the meat and suppliers, but do you have a plan? I mean, you mentioned cereals before. Would there be a plan to expand that way? Or
I think the way we're thinking of our brand is as a service brand for people that really care about food and want to pay it. We think of ourselves as trying to get into the fine food sector. And therefore, we're thinking of expanding the range. And it's quite contrary. I think you guys often advise brands on how to do things. And it's quite contrary to most advice, because most advice would be focus, say, on mayonnaise and become the main mayonnaise champion or the next kombucha or something like that. I love kombuchas, like mayonnaises as well, that sort of thing. But it would be a very focused approach and try to just be the alternative in mayonnaises and be the alternative to Hellmann's. But we're more, and I think it's maybe because we're driven by the organicness as much as anything and the quality of the ingredients. And so our whole concept is really about food values, food qualities, and less about, oh, we're going to be the biggest brand in X.
How would you say the organic sector is? I mean, I guess there's two elements. This is how it is in Europe, which would be interesting to talk a little bit about, versus how it is in the UK and what have been the main changes over the sort of lifetime of Organico.
Yeah, so in the UK, we're at around 3 billion now in a market size. And I was just picked up a grocer supplement. Dairy market's 12 billion. I think, and I haven't checked it before coming on, but I think things like the confectionery market or the soft drink market or the crisps and snacks market are bigger than 3 billion. So we're still quite small. We're about 1%, 2% of the food system generally in the UK. In France, up to 12 billion. And it was neck and neck back in those days of Planet Organic. It was very similar. So it's grown four times bigger. It's still small in France. It's still, a niche. But it's a niche that's much more supported and is being pushed forward a lot more. Places like Denmark, you're hitting up to 50% on certain products. Now, don't 100% quote me on this, but I think carrots and eggs and milk are pushing around the 50%. So one in two of your purchases organic in countries like Denmark on some of those key commodity ingredients. And in general, foods, percentage of the total food market, they're above 10% in Denmark. So there's some countries where it's really, this, and in land terms, you've got people like Austria and Estonia leading Europe. Austria's already 35% of their land is organic. But even countries like Italy, Germany, and France are getting one of them. Italy's about 18%. That's a big agricultural country. So that's almost one in five of the percentage of land is organic. So that's kind of showing a programmed growth, because they have all the same problems in a funny way that we do about price, about convenience, about the pleasure. So what we're trying to go with our brand is put all the ideology at the back of the pack and in a conversation like this. But really, when we're confronting a consumer, it's, yo, just eat this. Yeah. It's lovely. Have it. Go on. And I'd like people to not be scared of cooking. I'm a bit scared. I'm a bit put off by the amount of chefism we've got in this country. We've got great experts. And I think they'd probably scare people off from cooking in a funny way. Because and that's not entirely true. There's TikTok videos and stuff, and people pick things off like that, and they cook well at home, and it's great. But can imagine that some people, you know, oh, it's not, you know, just cook for yourself. It doesn't have to be high end. Just, you know, go for it. Use fresh ingredients and basic kitchen staples, and try and steer clear of hyper process.
Do you have a view on what's holding back the UK? Well, why, you know, what's making the growth so much higher in other places in Europe?
So it's kind of a lack of consistency on the kinds of, we flit around from trend to trend. So we flitted to lots of special diet things. We flitted to vegan. Vegan's not just a trend, so don't get me wrong, but there was a trend element to that. And then before that, I remember this quite well, because I was going to America finding organic products that were paleo, or that were, at one time there was loads of dried kale flavored snacks. They were all over, and you kind of think, yeah, that's great to have in a shop, but you don't want half your shop to be these kind of things. So we're a little bit trend based, but also we don't have government support, and that's at all levels of government. Our government's kind of absent. It's AWOL. It produces every 4 years, it produces a great big special commission on farming or on food or on health or on whatever, but it never ties things together.
There are health benefits to eating simpler food, I guess, is.
So there are health benefits to not eating hyper-processed. If you eat a organic shortbread, it may avoid some hyper-processed. It may avoid some cheaper ingredients where you might substitute palm fat for butter. And depending upon where your position is on butter, because things like animal fats are coming back into, don't demonize them. But I'm not a doctor there, and I'm not sure that having loads of animal fat is good. An organic ice cream isn't going to be a healthy product. Yeah. But if you look at the back of the organic ice cream, there's going to be one or two ingredients you wouldn't use at home. One of them is guar gum, and it'll be another, and that's a kind of binding agent. All the rest are not allowed. Look at the back. And so often if I'm buying an ice cream, but it's hard to find. This is a tragedy. And as I say, if I shop in France, I can find lots of options.
Yeah.
And so that's, we just haven't got that argument. And I think also the tragedy in the UK, you asked me why it hasn't really worked, is we haven't had a strong independent sector. Because what I saw happening in France is there was a very strong ideological independent sector where you could almost be encouraged to move into organic shops. And also it came from a alliance of farmers, an alliance with the farmers, with the consumers, and with the shops in between. And some of these shop chains are owned by farmer cooperatives and consumer co-ops and worker co-ops, if you want it, all mixed in. So there's an ideology of this is what it means, and we're going to protect it, and we're going to defend it, and we're going to grow it, and this is our belief system. And that we had in UK on a whole food thing, but it never transferred in any big way to organic. And maybe it's really, really hard to open and run shops in the UK. It might be just the different maths. It might be that they need to turn over at a higher rate. I'm not quite sure. But sometimes I visit some of these French shops. There's two people in quite a big shop. And then you go to an English shop and you see 10 or 15 workers. And also not that many consumers, especially. During the whole day, you can go into a shop and it's not, you think, how do they operate like that? I think if you want to be in all organic in England, you've got to believe in it. There is a market there. And we think we're the future of proper ecological farming. And I think there's all these strong arguments around hyper-processed and what you are and aren't allowed to do in organic. But the support hasn't been there, and the market hasn't really been growing that fast. It's been growing well enough, but it's not, you know, dynamite or fireworks or whatever.
What do consumers think about organic, or what do they understand by organic? And does that change with younger consumers? Do they expect something different from organic?
I don't think consumers fully understand organic unless they're organic consumers. And I think it goes back to this trend thing. So now there's a trend around regenerative. I looked at the Wild Farm certification standards, and there's literally no standard in there. It's all a PR document. So you can go and look at it on the website. Go and look at the organic standards, the regulation. Well, okay. When you buy a flat, or if even if you hire a car, you've got 5 pages of really opaque terms and conditions. Or on your iPhone, look at your iPhone, look at the terms and conditions of your iPhone. That's what organic laws look like. Opaque, almost impossible to work out. There's 2 or 3 sets. You're not sure which one you refer to. There's endless amendments and updates. Go and look at the Wild Farm standards. And it was much more what you would write in a marketing document. I didn't literally see a standard there. Yeah. And so a lot of what people are saying in regenerative is right, but it's what we're saying in organic as well. And we're standard, we're certified, we're checked, we're validated.
I was going to say that, I mean, the organic is a standard in the sense that if you buy an organic product in one place, it conforms to the same regulations, I guess.
Yeah.
Whereas,
it's not just that, it's checked. It's audited. You can't get away for very long with an organic fraud because someone somewhere will check you. I've had situations where something's picked up in Belgium and it's an alarm for us, and it gets fraud in England is done through, and it's not even necessarily fraud. Sometimes you can have a persistent chemical or something flown over, and someone detects a slight trace in it, and they'll set it and they'll go to trade and standards in the UK. It might change. I heard there might be changes afoot for who manages. But, you know, it, up till now, it's been trade and standards. Well, they would ring you and say, oh, you got sesames. Actually, sesames is a really good example, because 3 or 4 years ago, there was an issue with sesames. And I was Googling, and I saw all the brands that had been redrawn abroad. And I contacted the Soil Association, found out more, wrote to my supplier, and said, there's been a problem with this in India. And it was to do with storage, not growing, that something had been put into a store where non-organic products, where a product, not a treatment product, had been used in the storage facility that isn't allowed in organic, gone into the sesames. All those sesame products were drawn. But I, as a responsible, and I wouldn't be the only one doing this, as a responsible brand, is saying, oh, fuck, what's going on? Getting my sesame things literally, sometimes I'll send something to a laboratory. If I'm not 100% sure on a quality control issue. So I think that it's not just that it's a law, it's a controlled law with controlled systems and people checking on it.
And people participate in it. It's you're part of the system, not being policed, I guess, is also the difference, isn't it?
You self-police if you really believe it. I said about fraud that scandals can happen accidentally, but they're quickly found. There has been swindles, and they don't last long.
How have your sales channels evolved? Where did you start selling, and how have you found it getting into other places?
So we haven't tried terribly hard to get into the multiple. So this is where we're very different to other brands, a startup brand, especially one that's pushed by venture capital, which we're not. Their only ambition would be to hit the big market.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit the point I was saying, is we're going for width of brand and not for volume for a few SKUs, which presents its own problems. So for us, it's been pretty much the same. And I think our channels are reducing because the old health food shops are reducing. And I think that what I'd like us as a brand to try and do in the UK is to appeal to farm shops. And in the UK, farm shops have got a lot of fine food brands to choose from. And I'm hoping that they think of, but they are looking at sustainability. So that's quite interesting. You read the Fine Food Digest and there's always a sustainability article in there. And so I'm hoping that which is partly what drove our, we thought our design was looking bad, really. And we junked it, and we even junked the name. and we went with real foods because we thought it resonated better. And we also wanted to go with, as I said earlier, the idea that here's a product, buy it. It's a lovely product. It's not a cheap product. It's a fine food product. But, you know, take it home, enjoy it. If you want to dig deeper, go ahead, because you're going to find some really great things behind this.
And you mentioned you're selling to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that quite difficult these days? Or
we set up a subsidiary before Brexit. Brexit was enacted, but it is quite difficult because we're duplicating everything. I'm constantly rushing off to have a VAT inspection in Europe or an organic certification because we've got a separate subsidiary, and all our accounting is double. All our because we've got two accounting systems. We've got a European one and a British one. We've got to documentate everything has been duplicated. So it's a testament to our team as well, because it's very small, that we're all doing that. And not just that, in fish, we lead in so many ways. We've certified ourselves with a German certificate called Naturland, which is organic in base, but they've got a wild fish standard. So we're managing all of that. It's happening right now with my manufacturer in the Azores, it's Portuguese islands in the middle of the Atlantic. This week, they've been certifying the fishermen. This is a different brand, the Fish Forever brand. They've been certifying the fishermen and the factory. And it's 5 days of certification. Thank God I've got good partners doing a lot of that. But we're paying it. We're overseeing it. We flew Naturland for their 40th birthday with a bunch of German press to go and visit this fishery, and they visited all the aspects of it: scientists, fishermen, ministry, packer. So all of that's going in a little office in Reading. It's kind of mad.
Actually, that reminds me. So, how big is the team, and what have you brought in house as you've grown, and what goes out? I mean, did you do the branding yourself?
That's a really good question. So we're a small team. We're 10 people, some of whom are part-time. There's a lot of WFH right now, so people are quite free to do their own thing. In the old days, maybe the advantage was you wouldn't get the best pay here, but you get a really nice environment to work in, and we were super flexible. But now super flexible is everybody, more or less. I think lots of companies are, especially office-based companies. So our team has slightly reduced, partly because of the cost of living crisis, and we had a hard time coming after Ukraine war, which was after COVID, and so we were selling a lot in the internet. That came down a bit. Customers were going bust, all of that sort of thing. So what we did is just, you know, reduce our expenditure a bit. Now we're growing at 20% this year, both the subsidiary and the UK business. I think we'll grow more later. So you asked me, what do we do ourselves? What do we hand out? It really varies. So we've handed a little bit of the sales out to sales forces. We've got two different sales functions handed out. We've just handed PR out. It's the first time we've done a little bit of PR once in the past, but we've handed that out. The design was completely handed out, but we've done the back of pack because we know that the back of pack bounces like a boomerang endlessly. And we know that because we do it, we look at it, then we get it wrong, then we look again, then we show it to the manufacturer, he changes half of it. Right. Then you have big arguments with the manufacturer, what are you allowed to say this? Then the manufacturer's certifier, because they're organic, checks it. And they sometimes say, and sometimes our certifier in England says that's slightly different. So there's a lot of messing around with back. So we've done that, but it means that my marketing guy has been spending a lot of time doing designs. And that's testimony to our flexibility and his flexibility as well. His readiness to do stuff. So also, and actually a really, really, really good tip. It's hard to sub the marketing and the sales because those are very, very hard jobs generally. So you don't always get results. And I've spoken off the record to Salesforce providers, and they say, we've got a 1 in 10 chance or 1 in 20 chance of getting this product in. So you're paying a lot of money for a 1 in 20 chance. But the one thing where we've had really good value for money is we've subcontracted our financial director.
Okay.
And that's a guy who comes twice a month. And I thought I was good at finance, and I'm not. I mean, it's so, and he's been a chief finance. So it's a thing. It's a thing they offer. They've been chief finance officers, so they're quite older people. They've had a career. Chief finance officers, quite big companies, and they join this kind of organization, and the organization hands them out to SMEs, and that's almost the best tip because it value for money.
Yeah,
they're expensive per day rate, but they really do stuff, and there's stuff on Excel he does. That would take me a day and a half, and he does it. Well, I wouldn't even be able to do it, and he does it.
Yeah, they've kind of got the battle scars. They've seen yeah. a few things. Yeah, yeah.
And he brought EBITDA into our business, which is fine because we don't care much about EBITDA, but we're trying to pay attention a bit.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, absolutely. And the brand is quite recent.
So we ditched the Organico name and went and led with Real Food. So it's called Real Food by Organico. That's registered. Whether at one point the Bioorganico drops off, that would be the logical thing. For now, it's Real Foods Bioorganico, and it will be for a while.
And was the look that I can see behind it, was that quite a step away from where you were before? Because it's very vibrant, very, very.
It is. We were a little bit classic, I would say. We were pretty. We were hand drawn. It had been done towards the idea of homeliness, but we felt that when we were looking, especially at the fine food market, brands were really quite well designed, and we fit. That's a big change in my last 30 years, that even small brands are leading with design,
yeah.
and they're very design led, and they're very conscious of those design clues. And we thought, oh, we're not looking good on the shelf. And also, I think too grain attention. I guess we've gone with a yellow color. But so there was a process. And that's why what we really liked about the people we work with, he's called Lawrence LaSalle, and it's called Horse's Mouth. But and they've got a lot of experience, but they really tried to understand our brand. They understood food. They even had worked in organic. And there was a lot of talk beforehand, but we'd already done 6 months of check-in and thinking about what our brand ID would be and what we would lead with.
Yeah.
And I think in the end, we thought that the best fit was to lead with this idea of let's just go with the joy of real food.
Yes.
Like, food should be joyful. And one of the reasons we did that is if we went, one of the kind of close alternatives was all the efforts. Like, oh, we're really African. We thought that can be a bit judgmental to a consumer and a bit finger wagging. And also someone's going to say, but you're not doing this because you can't literally do all every, you know, yeah. You shouldn't even have packaging. You shouldn't have plastic. You shouldn't carry, you know, there's so many things. So we thought someone's going to say, oh, you're not doing this. You could do better. And then we thought the finger wagging was very important. And then one of the rival designers that they pitched with a pre-idea, and it was exactly what I ditched in my head, and it was brown paper bag look and green writing. Why do you think organic has to look like this? It's like ridiculous. So yeah, we're about good food, and you can learn every, you know, so we've got the B Corp, we've got something called Planet Score. We're really campaigning. We've always stood for our values. But that's just the background. You as a consumer are buying a product in a shop, and you just want something that's nice to take home, and hopefully our stuff is nice.
Yeah, I guess you want things like the provenance and the, you know, how it's produced.
Yeah.
You almost want them to be hygiene factors. Like, of course, that's how we produce it, sort of thing. And the focus is the product and the experience of enjoying it. How do you find the B Corp world? I guess that aligns pretty well with where you are, or did you have to change a load of stuff to get on board?
B Corp does sort of represents all the things that you're not doing necessarily when you're organic. So some of the things you do, you know, a lot of the organic companies I know are nice to their employees, they're nice generally, right? So that's in their DNA, but it's not written in the requirements. Right. And you could have slave labor on an organic farm or other abuses or whatever. So that's one of the big differences. And then it was a rapper that was well recognized, I think, by younger generations. I quite like the full visibility of B Corps. If you want to spend the time, you go on the B Corps site yourself and you look at people's scores under the different headers. We've got one of the top environment score. We've got one of the top scores generally. Under the environment, we're in the top 1% in the world. We're slightly higher than Patagonia, amazingly, which is like, you know. Yeah. So that's a huge score that we're very proud of. We got extra points. Of course, you then try and get the points when you're in the B Corps system.
Yeah.
And there was some things that as a small company we thought were we created policies. And then the other thing I'd say was really good. So, you know, we didn't have a commuting policy or we didn't, but some things it did teach us. It taught us to talk a lot more to the team generally.
Okay.
So, you know, in a way, all the package and advertising, we're a small team, so we're all on one floor now. But one time we weren't, and you thought, oh, they don't want to necessarily know, but we take time out now. And then it also was a way of some things you're so swept by the daily shit of your day that you don't focus on these things. And B Corps are kind of, oh, remember, you've got to do X. And it prioritizes that. And then there's this whole benchmarking thing. And then if there's something I'm not quite fond of B Corps is that they think with a very ESG pre-imposed, pre-edited mindset.
Yeah.
And you're sat there as someone who's always been in these. Yeah, but that's not necessarily my sport. So I won't mention it. I won't mention the name here, but there's a certification that's really bad in fisheries. B Corps wants you to have that certification.
Right.
So we're sat there saying, no, they're bad. That's why we don't have them. We it would be cheaper for us to do it with them, but we don't. And David,
how much dialogue is there with B Corps?
You can have dialogue, but I'm not sure how much. And I'm not in. It was frustrating that. And we were using a B Corps consultant. And that's another thing that I would really recommend is that if you're going down the B Corps route, try and get a consultant because they help you. But B Corps itself is changing how it's doing things. And they felt that at the beginning they were appealing to more obvious companies. And now more and more companies are going into B Corps and they've got to be more careful. And I think, again, I'm not the expert on the change, but I think that at one time there was a criticism that you could do really well in one category, but not necessarily well in another. And now you've got to pass all the categories. But that's all yet to be launched. It's been beta trial. This is complicated stuff to set up a certification. But B Corps, you know, I like them generally. I think it helps. It's a kind of standardization of your general ethics.
What are the key things you want to be doing in the next sort of 3 to 5 years with the business?
So because of my age, I'm at a situation where I need to have some sort of succession idea. And if that succession isn't selling, because I'm not in a rush to sell, because I think it would change our value set. I don't think we're quite ready on it. It does, all of that sort of thing. And it's funny to have taken this long and we're still not ready. So you kind of think, well, how are we going to do this? And the way I've looked at that is I'm bringing more and more shared responsibilities and people are coming out more and more to shows. And before we started this, I was saying, we don't have someone in every role. We don't have a buyer. We don't have. So I'm encouraging everyone to do a bit of that. Two of my team went to Italy to do the tomato sauces last year, and it's not their job, but they're capable, they're competent. We tasted it in together. They went, and what's funny is a lot of suppliers, you say, I want this, and they send you something that's what they think you should want, and you say, no, that's not what I wanted. And so the way around that is like a proper company, a bigger company would have a food lab guy that goes out and does the recipes. But we make our own or using their skill set, make, you know, on the quality side, quality control side of things. But one of the things we want in our tomato sauces, a lot of tomato sauces are quite low on the key ingredients. So we were doing a tomato sauce Norma, the normal one, which comes from Sicily, which is the aubergine-based one. And we kept wanting more aubergine, you know, because the base one started with five. It was taste, you know, hard to taste the aubergine. So we were upping it. We made a beautiful mushroom one, but we haven't launched it because you need a separate certification for the wildness of the mushrooms to be organic because they're not farmed. And right. to bring that certificate in for the volumes we had. But we've got that in the back. It's the best mushroom sauce I've ever tasted, which you won't be able to taste until we can bring it. So, you know, it's lovely that we're bringing people, you know, and a couple of the team have been off to the Azores when there's stuff like that. Some are going to the conferences. So I'm trying to democratize that a bit, which is fun.
Is there something that you wish you could go back in time and tell yourself that would have saved pain, cost, missed opportunities? Is there a lesson you wish you could have gone back and told yourself?
Almost everything in some ways. I think that the fault I have that's reflecting the business is that I'm more about the passion and the ideology and I'm almost semi-academic in my head. When we did our carbon policy, we just spent a lot of time looking at it and we've come up with a really valid approach, but only big companies can afford that with proper sustainability teams. So we do that. And I do that instead of selling. So I'm not focused instead on the selling enough. I like the passion of what I'm doing. So that's my big, it's not even I was like that then. It's permanent.
Yeah.
It's a permanent problem.
It's DNA, isn't it? And that's the thing. Yeah. That's the thing.
And then the other thing is just shit happens. You know, you trust people and they swindle you, or, you know, the currency crashes and you whatever it is, there's all sorts of stuff that happens and you just got to ride it. So yeah,
excellent. Well, thank you very much for all that. You can find out more about Real Foods by Organico by online at www.organicorealfoods.com, and if you want to listen to more episodes of the Food Founders Interview, go to froghop.co.uk/podcast or search for Food Founders Interviews wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what we're doing and what you've been hearing, give us a follow or even a review. It all helps. Thanks again, Charles. Really fascinating and lovely to talk to you.
It's been a pleasure. Bye.